San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle, down to Cabo, out to the desert. You can get us free on iTunes if you search It's Your Money and Your Life. Also, we stream live on 760KFMB.com, and all the podcasts are available on iymoney.com, all commercial free. Anyway, now it's time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a best-selling author and a philanthropist and a family office expert advising several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe.
How was that marathon, that half marathon?
It was only a half marathon. America's Finest City Half Marathon was on Sunday.
And I heard you did pretty well.
I ran it because it was the 10th anniversary of my first ever half marathon, which was also America's Finest City in 2004.
Huh.
And yes, I did well. While it wasn't my fastest time there, I missed that by 2 minutes, it was my best finish against the field. It was, you know, really, really hot that morning.
So out of the total, where did you come in?
I came in 641st out of about 6,500 finishers.
And that percentage is what?
I was in the top 10%.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I'd had a couple previous top 1,000 finishes, but this was my highest finish. I do really well in hot weather, and I do really well running up real steep hills like we had. From like mile 11 to mile 12 and a half, 10 blocks up A and then hang a left and do 12 blocks up 6.
Nothing I like more than talking about it.
Exactly. I saw you were first in the beer line. You didn't even run.
Actually, I think I had an allergic reaction. I can't drink too much beer, noticed. But the Pilsner, the Bro Pils by Fat Cat is pretty good
stuff. I was just behind a Fat Cat delivery truck yesterday on Coast Highway.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. Isn't that great? Boy, they're getting around out there. I've given them some leads in there.
I needed a six-pack around mile 11 and a half.
Yeah, well, when you start drinking beer, then you can try that.
Exactly.
Hey, great show last week. Bud Friedman, that was pretty cool, from the Improv, reminiscing about Robin, and then, of course, Scott Slater. Slater's 50-50,
I'm dying for one of those 50-50 hamburger bacon burgers.
Yeah,
right now.
I've
been starving since Sunday. I wonder why.
Well, maybe we can get over there and you can treat us to lunch at one of these days.
And I did lose 6 pounds on Sunday.
Well, we have to work on putting that back, though, obviously. Anyway, let's see. Anything else? How are the Padres doing? I know they didn't do so hot in singles.
No, I don't want to talk about the Padres.
But they did.
I want to talk about meaningful things.
Oh. Hey, if they make the playoffs, you know, you're going to have to eat crow.
They're what, of the Pacific Coast League?
No, look at, they're only, what is it, still 6 games down in the wild card?
Yeah, well, whatever.
Anyway, yeah. Also some sad news. We lost Don Pardo this week, 96 years old, the famous announcer. I think he was the announcer from Saturday Night Live from day one in 75 up until his passing. So mm-hmm. That's working into your 90s. That's the way to do it, folks. So anyway.
Hopefully we won't be.
Yeah, our condolences to everybody and his family and those who knew him. And I think it's about time to introduce our VIP guest, don't you think?
Let's do that.
Well, this gentleman here, he's a noted attorney in San Diego, but he's got a phenomenal business background as well. Very colorful, illustrious career, very influential in the world of politics as well, he and his wife, and specializes in class action suits, so we'll get into all that. But his name is Jeffrey Krinsk. Jeffrey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fine, but I would like to say both hello and that illustrious introduction was much more than I deserve.
I could have gone much longer. Hey, I see you share the same birthday as Billie Jean King, and also that's the day that JFK departed, November 22. Did that have special significance for you?
Well, I don't think the day that JFK departed has anything less than special significance for anyone who was alive and I believe everyone I've talked to remembers where they were, even if they were too young like myself, to appreciate both the significance of it from a political perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it interjected the first arrow of reality into many young children's hearts at that particular point.
We got sent home from school that day.
Oh, I did too. Yeah. I who can forget that? I mean, I honestly think modern U.S. history, we took a, that was a real wake-up call. I mean, I don't think we've ever fully recovered emotionally as a nation from this, those, well, he and his brother, Martin Luther King, you know, we never had assassinations. I guess the last major one was 1900, Garfield, right? A president getting assassinated. We weren't around for Lincoln. So generationally, we tend to forget these things. But anyway, I didn't mean to get too bogged down in that, but I'm sure every November 22, when it's your birthday, you have some other thoughts on your mind.
Well, I do think about that, but I'll tell you, I've been out at Hyannis Port and at the compound, fortunately, just for political fundraising and a little bit of social exercise. And when you're actually there, you feel like you're sticking your nose into the books of history to some degree. Mm-hmm. And Ted Kennedy was the person I was with that particular day, and this was maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago. And I remember the chills that came down your spine when he said, "Look, let me show you." And he'd pull you over to the sand dunes, and there'd be a trail to take you over the hill, and he'd go, "That's where my brother taught me how to swim, and that's where my brother almost drowned me when we were dealing with X, Y, and Z." So it always has significance, and the Kennedy name is always very special, Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, I remember those photographs of John with his two children in the rowboat, were probably right off of that coast.
Yeah, you never forget it once you're there, not because it's unforgettable, but the significance of it historically.
Well, you're from the East Coast, right, Jeffy? Were you born in Boston?
Yeah, I was born outside of Boston in Brookline, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
Ended up going to law school in Boston as well thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Have my family and still have a number of relatives there.
I think the former Governor Dukakis still lives in Brookline, right? In the same house he's been in for many years. Is that correct?
That's what I understand, but I've never been that close to politics in the Boston area.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a location, though. It's always it's always great to be there, always great to visit.
Let's see. So grew up in Boston, BU Law School, and then let's just take it in the timeline. What happened after law school?
Well, from a professional perspective, I passed the New York bar and began doing legal work from the defense's side, and that was down in Manhattan where I was admitted. And I had the good fortune of coming out to visit my young sister, who had recently joined, after going to Washington University, the San Diego Zoo. Where she was working with what were called the big cats at that time and training them.
Really?
It seemed to me to be a prima facie situation where she was deadly in need of some supervision. Mm-hmm. But what actually happened and what actually excited me is entering San Diego, I went to her house, and it was on Mission Beach. Mission Beach isn't as developed then as it is now, but mm-hmm. I said, "Susan," my sister's name, "what are those big round circular pieces of concrete that you see out there on the beach?" "Well," she said, "those are fire rings." "Fire rings? Just comes out of the sand?" "No, no, no. You could do what you want there." I said, "Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. How do you go about and reserve one?" She said, "You don't have to reserve
a
fire
early
ring. You just have to enjoy them. And what time do you have to leave?" "There's no time that you have to leave. Is there any restriction on what you can eat and drink?" "No, the opposite. The wilder that you eat and drink, the more they seem to appreciate it here." I said, "My Lord, let me see now. I'm in Manhattan, and everything that you do and your much of your effectiveness and stature is directed to the amount of money that you could put down for a meal or spend on something else. Then you can pair it here where money is secondary to being able to use your creativity and imagination to enjoy people and participate in conversation. I think I'd like to try that." "But of course," she said, "there are no businesses to speak of in San Diego." I said, "Well, That's a sore spot, because ultimately you need that, and I was not a member of the California Bar." But I looked at was reading the local paper, and on the back page, there was a unique 2-foot design. Many people don't know it now because it's sort of gotten in the background, but it was a trademark that was owned by the Ratner family, run principally by Stan Foster. And I knew that 2-foot design was for Hang 10, and I knew it had some association with something that I wanted, but I didn't know quite what I wanted and what it was. And, of course, it was the famous logo of Hang 10 International, which had a need for an attorney. and was looking for a young associate, and I quickly went from associate to general counsel to chief operating officer. Anyway, in San Diego.
Well, hold that thought, Jeff. We've got to take our break, but that's interesting stuff. We'll come right back with more of Hang Ten and more about Jeffrey Krinsk right after this. Hang on. We are back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio, CPA, myself, Joe Vecchio, and our special guest, Jeffrey Krinsk, Esquire. He's an attorney, investor, and business advisor, successful on all fronts. We left off with Jeffrey joining Hang Ten as corporate counsel and moving up the ladder. You want to take it from there?
Jeffrey, did you know you're not our first illustrious guest from Hang Ten? We had Wes Anson on not that long ago. Do you know Wes Anson?
Well, Wes and I actually joined Hang Ten within, three, 4 weeks of each other, and I know Wes, not being an attorney, had many more interesting stories because he, of course, came over from Playboy.
Right. Exactly.
Where licensing wasn't a business, it was an existence, and you lived it night and day.
Yes, and he had a great story about that, so get on our archives, folks, and look that one up, too, Wes Anson. But anyway, so you joined as corporate counsel. I guess from the time you left your sister's house, how soon was it that you joined Hang Ten? It probably was a matter of weeks, huh?
Well, it wasn't a matter of weeks, but it was certainly within 7 weeks, and I guess that's an amount of weeks because I won't forget it. They said, make sure you're here January 2nd, 1979. So I feel like a native. That's a long time ago, and it certainly was a foot in the door to my proceeding in a direction that I always wanted to undertake, not only as an attorney, because that too was a foot in the door, but into business, and I just loved every moment of being at Hang Ten, and
they became a pretty big brand. I remember, you know, seeing their products in Chicago and all. I mean, you guys expanded pretty well, right?
That's true, and you can't underestimate the importance of the American market. But from the perspective of making money, which is what business is about, the prominence of the firm in countries such as South Africa, Japan, certain other parts of the Far East, where you could exploit the Americanization of it, the American identity, without having to put up the sales figures, was much more successful on a per capita basis, aggregate basis.
Made in USA meant a lot, didn't it?
Certainly the two-foot design meant an association with freedom and a camaraderie with the surf that was lacking in many authoritarian countries at that time.
Let's see here. And all the products were produced and made right here in San Diego? Is that
actually very few, if any of them, are ever made here. The purpose of licensing is intrinsically to be able to just get paid for the goodwill that's intrinsic in your trademark. Therefore, in order to preserve your entitlement to the trademarks, you need to maintain quality control, and we did that very thoroughly and effective. You nonetheless encourage your licensees, because these aren't franchises, they're licenses, to use the best people using the ingenuity that is available in their particular markets and that reflects unique characteristics while we still maintained the credibility and authenticity of the trademark, so it would always be distinctive.
But you helped them along on that process, right?
We put ourselves in a position where every single item that was ever sold had to first be approved by corporate.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Interesting. So some cool stuff to know there.
And from that point, because it seems to fit together, I ended up, what was very unique was, in fact, that we had a tremendously successful licensing organization, but we didn't sell a product that had our trademark on it. So people were fascinated at how sales personnel and the organization itself could be so effective. And in that regard, there was a very small unknown company called Guess Inc. Mm-hmm. that hired some people to find the best personnel that they could to try and replicate what had been done. But the difference being they had a very, very powerful brand because they manufactured the jeans that many, many, particularly many of some of your younger listeners, either know of or knew of back then.
Oh, Guess jeans, sure, big deal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And of course, the intrinsic there are many attractiveness to it when you actually have a brand, because then you can actually have stores, and when you have stores going to prospective licensees, you have an additional indicia that may be able to sell that license. The license will get you. Then it was 5%, then it moved to 6%. It's probably 7% or 8% to gross sales now, adjusted for returns. People think of that as not being a lot of money, but let me tell you, it took up the majority of the profits of many of our licensees.
I wish I had given Steve Jobs the Apple idea, huh?
Yes, but don't forget, it had no goodwill till he put it into it.
Right,
that
of course.
Makes a difference.
Well, you got to get on the ground floor, you know.
Boy, isn't that true? But these were this was a company, and I'm talking about guests that had a good presence of foreign investors, and was run by the Marciano brothers. That created a lack of, from my perspective, a lack of cohesiveness between business ethics and the way you could run your company. So it ended up being a short-lived romance that ended, I believe, wonderfully for all involved, and I got back to San Diego immediately.
Uh-huh. So you went from corporate counsel to an executive, the president, and then back to San Diego as what, just start practicing law again? Or?
And at that point, I was looking for what to do next, and because I liked business more, I actually was intent upon finding a company to take over and turn it from a small company into a large company. I actually was thinking initially of a bank for that particular purpose, but for the most part, they didn't like outsiders to show up at the door and offer to become the largest shareholder in exchange for board position. Somehow they thought they might lose control that way. So I got involved in what turned into an extraordinary legal battle that lasted for years. When I started to buy up stock in a small publicly traded company called Fabulous Inns of America,
uh-huh.
The point wasn't to run hotels, and the point wasn't to expand that company. The point was to actually have a public traded company that, lo and behold, at that time, when your average PE ratio was 7 or 8, to be able to take pieces of paper and realize that if you gave enough of them to real bricks and mortar and real companies, they'd give you their company back. Unfortunately, never got a chance to do that, though I can say with some pride that everyone who invested near or with me had a good return on that particular investment. It was only after that episode, as I say, that I got back involved in the practice of law after having gone through that battle and had myself thus associated with some of the sharpest minds in the legal community that fascinated me from the first day that I met them.
How long did that legal battle go on, though? That was forever.
That was for 2.5 years.
2.5 years,
and
okay.
I could never get, I was just too young at that time. I couldn't get the traction that I needed to get large dollars behind me, or perhaps the imagination to be able to spark a sense of wanting to participate in shared vision of what could become.
Mm-hmm. So you became the CEO of Fabulous Inns, and then there was a legal battle after that,
and the legal battle continued. As that legal battle continued, and the legal battle continued after we won and got the dissidents out over who would next lead it, and we got an offer we couldn't turn down to take our shares in exchange for some of my former allies deciding that they were going to stay and buy that position, but they did not at that time want to burden the tax liability that would have been the result of liquidating the firm and beginning over with the corporate shell.
So
that's an easy
this,
way to do that.
This was a battle amongst the shareholders, I guess, right? Blocks of shareholders.
War is always battle, unfortunately.
Well, Disney had a huge one, too, right?
Disney had a huge one, too. It just goes on and on, and your takeover battles, as I say, always pit uh-huh. the shareholders. Unfortunately, invariably pit the shareholders against the entrenched management that represents them, because the process itself is a divorce among a given shareholder with a given constituency, and suspicion begins to reign. What are they getting that I'm not?
Well, it typically drives the value up when all this controversy is going on, doesn't it? Because obviously, if people are fighting about it over a company, it must be worth something, right?
Well, you talk about the LA Clippers.
Look what happened there. Yeah.
Well, it's true. Mm-hmm. You're always talking about value, and you realize that you're not just talking about small companies. You're talking about NBC. You're talking about CBS. You're talking about battles for the largest pharmaceutical firms in the world. Many of them in England and France that then put up artificial barriers now to, well, they extol the attractiveness of their way of government and their economics. They simultaneously
phenomenal.
Put barriers in the way to take
we'll
them
get
over.
More. We'll get back to more of the battles and successes of Jeffrey Krinsk and all these great stories right after New Sports and Weather. Hang on, we'll be right back. Back with the second half of the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and now this is the time where we get over to Richard to thank our wonderful sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. That would be UBS, Prospect Street in La Jolla, Drew Freitas, Michael Carrancha. Couldn't do it without you and your team. Right across the street in downtown La Jolla on Prospect Street from UBS is the best business bank in San Diego. That would be Regents Bank, Steve Sefton, and Sean Puckett. The law offices of Brenda Geiger, estate planning and asset protection. And I know Brenda's oldest just went back to school a couple days ago. They sure start them early now in August here in San Diego, but always exciting when the little ones go back. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics. Joe, they had the baby, so we got a new daddy.
Wow.
That's their second one in about 2 years.
He's expanding.
But Signature Analytics, the best CFO service here in San Diego. Yeah, they're definitely expanding.
Expanding the firm.
Expanding the family firm. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista, Paul Polito and Don Epic. Thank you very much. Joel Grushkin and Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. And if you want to talk about improving values, how about Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, by far and away the best business valuation firm that I've ever worked with, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and how to reduce those risks and thus, much like Jeff, we was talking about, increase the value of the company or companies. Also, thanks to Courtney Lover, PopX Graphics, for doing such a marvelous job on our website that's been attracting a ton of attention. So thank you, everybody. And Joe, our listeners probably want to know more about our sponsors. How can they do that?
Well, they just get on iymoney.com, get their cursor over to the sponsor tab. There's a drop-down menu there. You can click on any one or all of them, and their background information, history, contact information is all there. And I know they've all been working with you for many, many years with great success. They're all professional colleagues, correct?
A long, long time. In some cases, back to around 1989 or 90.
Yeah. Well, speaking of professionals, Jeffrey has several law cases cited in his Wikipedia entries. So, this one against Great American, you represented shareholders, I take it. You want to summarize any of those for us?
So, Jeffrey, after Fabulous Inns, you then went into private practice?
Yes, I went into private practice. In fact, got a partner who had been my largest adversary during my battle over the Fabulous Inns, and in fact, just to put it in perspective, the real leadership of that battle, though it ostensibly was me, was my attorney who I hired, Bill Larrack. Is just he still represents to me the gold standard in litigation. And
first guest on our show, by the way.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but
it's a damn good choice, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, there are many battles, but I'll tell you, I have a craw in my throat regarding this minimum wage deal. I see today that they overrode the veto of the mayor. But you look at how they overrode the veto, and there are so many exits for what's such a minimal amount of progress and what's such a key indicia of both our concern for others and our concern for seeing that the business continue to grow. Somehow, through many ways, including the first lick of logic, one believes that when you raise the minimum wage, what you're really doing is impeding economic growth. And in fact, what you're doing is quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that's true at all levels. That doesn't mean it's true in all circumstances. But 9 times out of 10, you're taking money, which is neither created or destroyed, unless it's created or destroyed, but it's not created or destroyed by
working
by the working class
yeah.
Persons. And they have a enormous a multiplier effect with their high propensity to consume, to use traditional economic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And all it does is increase the velocity of money mm-hmm. to the point where you end up having an increase in purchases that far excels what you do if you end up having that same packet or quantum of money deposited in a bank or in somebody's account waiting for a rainy day to accrue.
You know, you're right. I wish business owners would look at it rather than I got to pay my employees more. Maybe more people are going to come in the doors and buy more of my stuff, right? I mean,
well, that's sort of the idea of living. You have to mm-hmm. look at things a little bit more dynamically. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you really end up just slowly being a squid congealing in a large bowl of jello.
You and Matt Taibbi.
You just can't do that. I mean, that's silly. It's like yelling at Obama and then looking at what Obama has actually done, the facts versus the myth.
Yeah.
I mean, what part of Obama don't you like? Is it the ending of the 800,000 jobs a month that were being lost at the time that Bush left office? Or is it the 2.2 million jobs that he's created since then that are fairly well-paying and that represent a real benefit to the economy? And if people can't appreciate and aren't beginning to see the buoyancy in the economic markets now, you'll see it over the next 6 years. It will be buoyant, at least for that particular time. And though I am an environmentalist by inclination, I do believe that fracking will lead that. I do believe that you'll be able to bet on the fact that oil will stabilize at between $70 and $90 a barrel. I do believe that that will grow economic growth by increasing disposal income between 2.3 and 2.6% over the next 6 years. So anyone who's listening, if they have a belief in this premise and they know how to turn that premise into an investment hypothesis, they should go forward with that in my mind. But that's just my opinion. I've been wrong before.
Well, I asked Team Boone Pickens on the Midway in front of a large audience. I said, you know, how much oil is actually left in the ground? And he said, well, I'm 80 years old, but I think in about 40, 50 years, y'all be on something else. So I don't even know what we're going to do after oil. Has anyone figured it out yet? I mean, biodiesel, I know algae. Any thoughts on that, Richard or Jeffrey?
Public transportation?
But the energy,
I'm teasing.
I can go, maybe listen, hydrogen, maybe solar, maybe more.
Look, I'm excited, Joe, because young people are really getting interested in business, but they're also doing it in the context of being interested in the world and the environment and their community.
Mm-hmm.
Like our guest last week, like the leadership event that I was at 2 weeks ago, where mm-hmm. I think 27 out of our 300 people were age 21 or younger.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good to see.
Okay, well, I hope they come up with a new fuel for oil then.
Let me come up with my answer, because one of my great loves in the world is UCSD and Scripps Institute of Oceanography, Institution of Oceanography.
Correct.
In fact, those who may be interested, there is a charity there called CRAI, which stands for Krinsk Research Advancement Initiative. And what that is an unbureaucratic repository of funds that are distributed to needy students so that people who are working on the future, including future power supplies, don't have to find themselves augmenting the minimal amount that they end up being supposed to work on by having to flip hamburgers at Jack in the Box during the week.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, I wouldn't even call it a plug. There are so many great mm-hmm. professors there, and there are so many great efforts that are being made. All of you have heard about and been intrigued by the concept of transforming seaweed into fuel
mm-hmm.
that's taking place, and there are beta testing of the highest degree going on in New Mexico, and its feasibility seems well established, but maybe more in the $90 range per barrel than the 70. But that too will come to pass, because economies of scale always end up following opportunity, and that's what you'll find in that regard.
We had Chancellor Khosla on a couple of months ago from UCSD.
Middle of June, right before
commencement. Yeah, middle
of June. Yeah, yeah. So
great
talking
stuff.
A bit about that. But anyway, we are
he's
coming
extraordinary.
Up,
yeah.
Oh, isn't he though? He's
we're
just an amazing.
Up, we're coming
amazing
up on our
person.
Last break, though, gents. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have to take a short break. We'll come right back with more Reach Your Money in Your Life right after this. We're back in the home stretch with It's Your Money, Your Life with noted attorney, class action attorney, business executive advisor, Jeffrey Krinsk. And Richard, you had a couple questions. Why don't you take it there from there?
Well, you keep saying class action attorney. Jeffrey, you are a plaintiff's class action specialist, correct? And how is that different? Why is that important?
Well, you know it's important primarily because everybody at the various Chamber of Commerce throughout the country and most of the republics in the legislature, both state and federal, are doing everything they can to make sure that we're not going to be able to continue to act as plaintiff's class action attorneys. The answer is what you can do when you have class actions, which is another term for what we call aggregate law, meaning you take an individual who would not either have the inclination because the amount is too small or the funds that it would take to proceed with the case is too large to justify it, and you have the ability to group them together. It's not easy to do. People think you put together disparate elements, and as long as they all raise their right hand rather than their left hand, they'll be able to be a class action. There has to be sufficient similarity. There has to be an essential core of grievance that's identical or at least significantly similar among all of them. It has to proceed in accordance with the highest ethical levels of litigation. And you go against the, I would say, the most gifted and capable litigation adversaries in the world, whether it's O'Melveny and Myers here, or whether you're going against Dewey Ballantyne, now not them in New York. It takes tremendous skill because the law itself is so capable of so many concatenations and implications that when you get a skilled opponent that will put 100 attorneys on a case, they can have every word questioned both to both get a different interpretation in the law or a different interpretation in the facts that you're applying to the law.
And they're not not cheap to bring these suits, right? They have tremendous investment, right?
Lawsuits. Even a small lawsuit will find that without any certainty of repayment that you're putting in at least seven figures and normally much higher numbers than that. As they proceed, they get more technical. You can't just be an attorney arguing the case. You need to have an expert. Normally, you need to have an expert for your expert. You might also need to have an administrator. You might need to have an administrative assistant who works in your office for the purpose of making sure that you keep track of who is a prospective beneficiary and who isn't. You also need, and this is very important, to have people in the particular area itself who will assist you with learning the particular area, someone who that we would call a management assistant, or and keep yourself around it. But perhaps most importantly, you need to have a good family life, because once you finish with a case, you want to immediately forget as much about that case as you can and get on to the next thing.
Maybe so take a month off, right, and travel or something.
Let me give you an example of a good case is, because I'm in process of developing that case now, and it's been filed first by our law firm in outside of Chicago in Lyle, Illinois. For those of you who might know diesel engines, Lyle, Illinois is the home of Navistar. Navistar is a fixture in the American diesel engine history, known more commonly as International Harvester, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard of International Harvester. Well, in about 2002, they were told by the EPA that their trucks in class 13, 15, and 17, these are the largest trucks you'll see on the road. These are those 10-wheelers or 12-wheelers, whatever they are called, would have new EPA requirements. And that to meet these new EPA requirements, they would have to have 0.02 parts of particulate per any given unit that they use to test these. They only had 8 years to begin working on this, and they began working on it fine. Except Navistar decided that they weren't going to follow the rest of the industry, and they were thought that they had the capability over 8 years to create a in-cylinder as opposed to an out-of-cylinder process for treating the exhaust. The trouble with that is, though they told everyone they had it about 4.5 to 5 years later, when 210 came around, they didn't have it. They didn't know how to have it. They never did have it. And what they had to do ultimately, and this is just a matter of months ago, is actually get involved in an agreement with Cummins to specialize, customize some of their engines to meet the flow. Before that happened, the way that they sold their engines were that they were non-conforming, but they didn't bother to tell the buyers right. that they were non-conforming engines. And when you have non-conforming engines, what you end up having is a lot of downtime, a lot of truck drivers that have to stay in hotels when they're on the road, a lot of towing, and a lot of similar difficulties with engines because they don't have the necessary ability on an in-engine mechanism to cool down the particulates enough so that they won't melt the engine. So
oh, great.
We end up having a lot of downtime. People are smart to stop before it actually melts. But you could get an idea of the mess that this costs. And people, some people will say, well, you know, these are trucking firms. These are fleet managers. There's 40 there and there's 100 there. And if 10% of their inventory is down, is that really harmful? Well, not is it harmful. It ruins the business. But besides ruining the
business. It's a low margin business, first of all. So yeah. you can't afford these extras.
Yeah, if you can't, as they say, if you can't get on the off the line in the morning, right. you're going to lose your business.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is there's a tremendous amount of entrepreneurs who have one truck, two trucks, some three. And those are the ones that have been particularly hurt. In fact, mm-hmm. that's the client that contacted us, and we said, no wonder you're having trouble living under these circumstances. You, of course, get a warranty when you buy them, but this is the Chamber of Commerce and Republicans against the average Joe. What do you think happens? Oh, they made a good faith effort to try and abide by their warranty. Mm. Yeah, but the buyer depended upon the warranty, and he didn't say that he'd get a best efforts attempt to try and rectify the downtime and problems that were being experienced. They represented to him that they'd have a good, capable machine. Incidentally, just to be able to sell these people the non-conforming trucks at the beginning, the EPA assessed a fine of $3,800 a truck.
Wow.
I mean, it gives you an idea of the degree of importance that they attach to it. So that's one area, but that doesn't cover, truthfully, the broad array of abuse that you end up finding in industries. And I don't mean to paint that broad a brush. Industry is so important. Business is so important. But when you get into certain segments of this industry at certain times, and I'm thinking as I talk of the pharmaceutical industry and the efforts that they make to exploit their perception as being the declarance of what is healthy and not, I take particular exception to it. How many of my listeners of the listeners to your show over the last recent weeks have encountered an ad talking about low T?
Maybe can you spend an extra few minutes with us on a bonus track, Jeffrey, and we can record? And
a pleasure.
All right, folks, we're going to have him go to the bonus track, go to iymoney.com, and we'll have some more with Jeffrey to get in some of these last thoughts. But anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you, Richard. Thank you to Eric Rubalcava, our sound engineer, Craig Blank, our con executive, and to Dave Smith, our program genius. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life, and get over to iymoney.com. Monday we'll have this all posted for you, so take care.